Marriage Today presents Foundations for Successful Blended Families by Jimmy Evans.
A blended family, when you define blended families, it's a marriage where one or both spouses bring children with them from a previous marriage or relationship. Sometimes it wasn't a marriage. Sometimes it was, you know, an unwanted pregnancy that, you know, resulted in a child or children, or maybe multiple marriages or something like that. But there's a different dynamic to it. 50% of all families are blended families. But there's also higher divorce in blended families, which isn't necessary. It's really necessary because there are dynamics present day one in blended families that are not present in other families. And you know, I mean, there's enough risk of divorce in a regular marriage, but when you have a blended family marriage, we need to understand the special issues related to that. Now, my dad came from a blended family, and my dad's dad got married, and he had two children, and his wife died. My dad's mother, my grandmother, she was married and had two children, her husband died. They got married and had six children, and my father's the oldest of the six. So my father had 10 siblings. I've got almost 30 first cousins on that side of the family. I mean, we've got a huge family on that side of the family. And I loved it. I mean, I really did. And there were the Messers. That was one side of the family. I've got cousins, aunts and uncles named Messer. And then there's the Evanses. The rest are Evanses. And we didn't know the difference. I mean, and I loved it. I think my grandparents did a good job having a blended family. And we were happy. We never considered that a person wasn't, you know, full blood or anything like that. We just had a great blended family. And I've seen over the years of doing what we do, we've seen the most incredible blended family relationships. Now, let me tell you about blended family seminars, because they're different. And that is, a lot of people in blended families just kind of feel like they did something wrong, or they kind of feel guilty, like somehow they're second-class citizens, or God doesn't love them as much, or they're not as special. Aren't you glad God loves us all the same? You know, Jesus had a blended family. You know that, don't you? Okay. He did not share the same father with his siblings. Now, a lot of them didn't know that, and if he tried to pull, you know, God is my father, they probably wouldn't have believed him. But, you know, there are a lot of great blended families in the Bible, and there are a lot of wonderful blended families that do a lot of great things. So I hope that you'll just accept the fact that you can have an incredible, blessed family in a blended family relationship. I want to talk about two things, and the first is disarming the day one dynamics of a blended family, because there are things present day one in a blended family that sometimes aren't. Now, not all these things may pertain to you, but some of them will, I promise you that. The first is unresolved feelings toward an ex-spouse. That's one of the day one dynamics, because when there is a blended family, there had to have been someone that caused a pregnancy and caused a child that went before. It could have been a spouse, it could have been a boyfriend, girlfriend, live-in lover, whoever it was. But here's the issue. 50% of people who are married or divorced 10 years later still have feelings toward their ex-spouse. Okay, 50%. And this is a tormenting thing. And what we need to understand is that a lot our society trivializes sex, but you realize the Bible says when we have sex with a person, we become one with that individual. You know, in 1 Corinthians, the Apostle Paul says, "Don't you understand that every other thing that we do is outside our body when it comes to sex? When you have sex with another person, you become one with that individual." Now, our society trivializes that, but what it means is, when you're in a relationship with a person, you're having sex with them on some regular basis, it means there's a joining of souls. And you know, there's this song that says, when a heart breaks, it doesn't break even. When you divide away from that person, a part of that person comes with you, and then you have an evil devil who is always interacting in those situations in two ways. And the first is perverting our memories. He'll come. Once a relationship is broken, I had a girlfriend in high school that, she was okay. I mean, but we kind of had a rocky relationship. And every time I broke up with Karen, I'd date her, and then I'd get tired of her, and I'd go back to Karen, you know, it was kind of the way it was. And I didn't like her. But when Karen and I liked her okay, but we didn't have a great relationship. But every time Karen and I had started having problems in our marriage, the devil would bring her up. And he'd say, "You should have married her." In reality, it wasn't that great of a relationship, but it was there every time there was problems. The children of Israel lived in Egypt under horrible, cruel bondage from Pharaoh. It was awful. They were there for 400 years. And Pharaoh, once Joseph died, and a Pharaoh arose that didn't know Joseph, he put them under cruel bondage. But Moses came and delivered them literally from whips and from torture. And they went out into the wilderness, and when they got out in the wilderness, they didn't want to go in the promised land because of the giants. And as soon as they saw the giants, they began to weep, and they said, "We wish we were back in Egypt. We remember the leeks and the melons and the onions and all the things." Well, they forgot Pharaoh. Little detail you forget. They forgot Pharaoh. They forgot the whips. They forgot the torture. They forgot that they were slaves in Egypt. And this is exactly what the devil does. You're in a previous relationship, and maybe you made a mistake. Maybe you didn't make a mistake. But I'm saying you're in this previous relationship, but it didn't last. For whatever reason, it didn't last. And what the devil does is we do bring a part of that person with us into the future. And what he does is as soon as you get into a new relationship and there's any difficulty whatsoever, he'll take you back and idealize that relationship and say, "Don't you remember all the good things?" Yeah, I do remember all the good things. But he doesn't want us to remember there was a reason it ended. You know, whether it was my fault or both of our fault or the other person's fault, whatever reason, it ended, and I've got to deal with that in my heart and say this: I thank God for the good, but I'm gonna let that go. That was my past. I'm not gonna let the devil torment me by constantly bringing up the past, because he'll always do it at the most inopportune times to make something bad worse in my life. So there came a point in my life, it wasn't an ex-wife or anything like that, but it was an ex-girlfriend that had a serious relationship with, and just say, "I'm not doing that anymore. I'm not going back to that place." So the devil wants to pervert our memories or poison our memories. And poison our memories just means bitterness, anger, and unforgiveness, just stewing on what that person did to us. But I want you to understand this. See, a lot of people come into remarriage mad. They're mad. When every time you divorce, your chance of divorce goes up 10%. And again, it's not necessary. You don't. That's not a statistic that you have to join into. But it's because of there is unresolved issues there, and you come into this new relationship, and you're not as patient as you were back then. You're not as forgiving as you were back then because your heart's been scarred. So the devil wants to poison our memories, and we become bitter. But regardless of who you're mad at from the past, your spouse is going to get the worst of it. Your disposition changes. Any time that I've had problems with unforgiveness in the past, Karen will get the brunt of it. A person could be dead. It could have been 20 years ago. But when you haven't resolved an issue from the past, you're going to spew it out, number one, on the person that you're now married to. So let me say, there was a previous relationship in your life, or you wouldn't have a blended family. Okay, one of you or both of you had a serious relationship somewhere in your past. And if that was a sexual relationship, which obviously it was to produce children, then what that means is you joined into a oneness with that person. And when you split up, a part of that person comes with you. That's just the way it is. And again, our society trivializes sex and just, "Oh, you can have any relationship you want to. And when you break up, you just go on." Okay, you can go on and God can heal everything, but you have to deal with the reality. There is a part of that person that you attached to, you became one with. So what am I saying? I'm saying thank God for the good. Thank God for the good. Just thank God for any good that was in that relationship and put it in the past. And when the devil comes to you in bad times, when you're having difficulty, and he brings back memories from the past to intrude in your life right now, stop it. Take that thought captive and said, it didn't work. It would not have been any better than what I have right now. I'm not going into the past. I'm going to live in my present. And I'm not going to let you come in and torment me with these feelings. Here's the way the devil does it. When you're in a relationship, he's the accuser of your spouse. And he sits there constantly accusing your spouse to you, telling you how bad they are, you married the wrong person, you should have done this, you should have done this. He always does that. And as soon as you break up, he comes and says, "They weren't so bad. You know, they're pretty good. They're pretty a lot better cooked than the one you got now." You know, and he'll just sit there and just torment you with memories from the past. You just go, "I'm not going back there. I'm not going to let you come and torment me with those thoughts. I take that captive, and I'm focused on the person I'm married to right now, and I thank God for them, and I thank God for this right now." The second thing is I forgive everyone in my past. I forget, regardless of what they did or did not do. I am not, see, unforgiveness is an invisible umbilical cord that connects us with our past. It feeds our spirit from the past. It could be something that happened to you when you were 5 years old and you haven't forgiven. It's still feeding your spirit. It's still feeding your disposition. It could have been a previous marriage. It could have been a business partner that did you in. But when you haven't forgiven, that is feeding, it's an umbilical cord that's feeding your spirit. Forgiveness reaches down and clips the cord and says, the devil will no longer feed my spirit from my past. I forgive that person and I bless them. I forgive that person. I won't talk bad about them. I'm not going to sit and rehearse the hurt that they did in my life, and I bless them. I bless them. And when, it's the most self-loving, forgiveness is the most self-loving act you will ever do in your life. Forgiveness doesn't make them right, it just makes me free. Until you let the past go, it won't let your future live. You cannot go forward constantly living in the past. And the devil comes, day one, dynamic of blended families. If you haven't resolved this, the devil's constantly working you to destroy your present relationships. He's constantly working you, dragging you back into either the bitterness of your past or glamorized memories that are just not real. This is what he always does. So you've got to close that door by saying, A, I forgive. And if I don't forgive, it's going to affect my family right now the most. I forgive. And I'll take those thoughts captive when we're in difficult circumstances and he comes and tries to torment me with idealized memories like he did with Egypt when they were entering into the promised land. So that's the number one day one dynamic. Number two is lower trust and higher expectations. And this is a difficult combination here. Lower trust is I have less goodwill towards you and more suspicion of your motives and actions. I was innocent once. I was innocent once until I got my heart broken. And I trusted until I got violated. And in my first marriage or first relationship, they were innocent till proven guilty. You're guilty till you're proven innocent. Because I'm not going to get my heart broke again. Okay. That's the number one dynamic. The second is higher expectations. I expect more of you. I expect more of you. Because of the failure of my past, because of what I've been through before, you're going to tote the note. I'm not putting up with as much. You walk in with your jaw set. You remember that movie, Dances with Wolves? Remember the girl whose name stands with a fist? A lot of blended families, you walk to the front door and say hi, and they go, hi. I was nice once. And I walked into a dark alley and got rolled, and I'm not so nice, so welcome. I expect more of you. And I have lower trust of you. You can't do that. You can't do that. And let me talk about how to deal with this. And again, I'm not trying to be trite with feelings that I know are very intense in your life, but I'm just saying it doesn't work. That's why divorce rates are higher in blended families, because these are day one dynamics. And you know, in a lot of relationships and a lot of first marriages, it takes a while for things to turn south, and it takes a while. In blended family relationship, it can exist the first day you meet. These are day one dynamics. So you date to establish trust. You date to establish trust. You can't have this, I don't trust you. Marriage is trust. When I marry you, what I'm saying is I'm entrusting my life to you. I'm entrusting my future to you. I'm entrusting everything I have, including the most precious thing, my children, to you. Marriage is trust. You cannot marry and mistrust. And the purpose of dating is to establish trust. If I have a question about your character, we're going to keep dating. If I have a question about your motives, we're going to keep dating. And we're going to keep dating until we have established trust and we've worked through issues within our lives. So A, you date to establish trust. B, you have to disassociate from the past. Like I said before, you forgive and you go on. And the next thing is you dream new dreams together. You need to have a vision retreat. You need to sit down and you need to talk about what your plans are for your future, what your desires are. And really, you can do this even before you get married, which is ideal. How many children are you going to have? Are you going to have any more children? What are your plans? What are your values? What are your family values? What is it that God has given you as a vision? Because I teach an entire session on how to have a vision for your marriage. What vision do you have for your relationship? Where there is no vision, you can't keep people together. In other words, let me say this another way. The vision for your marriage can't be not to re-experience the past. You can't live with a retro vision because all it does is just drag you behind the truck. You've got to have a forward vision. And when you've had your heart broken and when you've been disappointed in the past and you enter into a new relationship, many times it's like you're going to tote the note, you're guilty till you're proven innocent, and you better do better than this last person in this last situation. And all the pressure then is on that spouse and the vision goes backwards. We have to say, we're going to date to establish trust. I've forgiven my past. I'm not going to put you under that. You're innocent till you're proven guilty. And you don't have to do anything beyond what a normal situation would require. And I'm not going to let the scars of my past become a harsh taskmaster for you in our marriage and put us in an undoable situation. And we're going to dream new dreams together. We're going to consult God. We're going to submit to God. My scarred emotions are not going to be the Lord of our marriage. Jesus Christ is going to be the Lord of our marriage. And in making him the Lord of our marriage, he's going to heal our past. He's going to heal our hearts. So number three, day one dynamic of blended families is inner vows. Inner vows. An inner vow is a self-promise related to a difficult circumstance that we've been through. Every person makes inner vows. I've made many inner vows in my past that I had to break. An inner vow, it's when you're going through difficulty, we make ourselves promises to comfort ourselves. That's the purpose of an inner vow. Example, no one will ever hurt me like this again. That's probably the most common inner vow. When you're going through difficulty, you just say to yourself, I'm not coming back here. I'm not coming back here. I'll never do this again. And no woman will ever treat me like that again. No man will ever treat me like that again. I'm not going to open myself up to anyone else. They always end up hurting me. I'll never let my children be exposed to this type of situation again. The next time this happens, I'm walking away. These are things you're just going through. You're going through torment. You're going through difficulty. And things are going south. And so you're trying to comfort yourself. And the greatest comfort you can give yourself in that moment is, I'm not ever coming back here. I may be in this stinking place right now, but I'm not coming back to this stinking place. And the problem is, it's sin. It's clearly sin. And here's what Jesus said. Matthew 5. Again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but you shall perform your oaths to the Lord. But I say to you, do not swear at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by earth, for it is his footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Nor shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black, but let your yes be yes, and your no, no, for whatever is more than this, these, is from the evil one. It's evil. You say, wait just a minute. Now, I'm hurting, you know. I'm a child. I'm in a bad marriage. I'm in a bad situation. And I sit here and I say, I'm never going to come back here again. Now, why is that evil? Because any area that you make an inner vow, Jesus cannot be Lord of that area. I'll never be poor again. Well, guess who's not the Lord of your finances? No one will ever hurt me again. Well, guess who's not the Lord of your relationships? It's evil. That's what he's saying. When we're in those difficult circumstances, we don't realize it, but the devil's sitting there feeding that because he wants us to make a million inner vows so that Jesus Christ is the least of our issues. We don't have any relationship. I mean, we may love Jesus. We may be saved on our way to heaven, but practically, I've taken control of every area of my life because I have an inner vow everywhere I can look. I'm never going to be poor again. I'm never going to be hurt again. A woman's not going to treat me like that. A man's not going to treat me like that. I'm never going to be vulnerable again. And all of a sudden, you wake up one day and you can't even breathe. You've got so many inner vows. It's sin. And I had these in my life, is that I had from my past and when I was a child and I didn't know how to process pain, I made many inner vows in my life. But here's what inner vows do. First of all, Jesus can't be the Lord of that area. Now, I want you to listen. In any area that you have an inner vow, you're a little crazy and you're unteachable. You're a little crazy. A little crazy. And all of a sudden, you smell that same smell that triggers. You see that same thing that triggers that memory from your past, and you go into full guard alert. Don't you talk to me like that. Don't you look at me like that. Don't you ever think about doing that to me. Because that reminds me of where I was in my past, and it reminds me of that promise I made myself. A little crazy. A little crazy. Nobody can talk to you. You have to go back into your past, and you have to realize every single time you made one of those, you're a little crazy, no one can talk to you, and you overreact. You'll always, anytime you're operating with an inner vow in your life, you'll always overreact. You're not healthy. You're not healthy. Okay. Why aren't you healthy? Because you entombed that pain within a self-promise that God couldn't get to. And in that darkness, Satan fed that hurt. And you're full of deception and full of pain. And you have to pop that thing before God can heal it. And all of us have been there. Every single person I've ever talked to has made inner vows. And you have to go back and say, I remember when they hurt me. I remember when that happened. And I remember when I made that inner vow. And you just go back into your past and say, Lord, I repent. I shouldn't have said that. I should have turned to you. And I should have said, this is painful, Jesus. And help me to respond accordingly. And I forgive them and help me and protect my heart. I should have done that. But instead I was mad, I was afraid, and I was hurt, and I made an inner vow. And now I find myself, a woman can't even look me in the eye. A man can't even look me in the eye. And I'm standing in the middle of my living room with a fist. And life isn't working, and family isn't working. It just doesn't work. You have to go back and locate that point in time when you made that vow, and you have to break it like this. Jesus, I repent. Because I didn't have the right to become God in my own life in that moment. I was hurting and I didn't know any better. I didn't do it because I knew better. I didn't know any better. But I see what it's done in me. I see the pain that it's trapped into my life and the way that I respond to certain circumstances. I repent for taking control and not giving you control, and I renounce that inner vow in the name of Jesus. And Lord, I pray that you'd heal my heart. Teach me how to respond to women. Teach me how to respond to men. Teach me how to respond to pain. Teach me how to respond to pressure. Teach me how to be righteous in the midst of a difficult circumstance. And he will. You become sane. You become teachable. You can understand, whereas before you couldn't. But many, many people, because of pain, come into blended family situations with inner vows, a lot of dangerous inner vows. But again, it's very common. Okay. Number four, day one dynamic of blended families is non-biological parenting. Is again, and this is a very special challenge for blended families. And here are the challenges. Number one, the protective instincts of a biological parent keeping their child away from the step parent. Now, this is one of the leading causes of divorces in blended families. The law of possession, there are four laws of marriage. In Genesis 2, 24 and 25, for this cause a man will leave his father and mother. That's the law of priority. We'll talk about that in just a minute. Second law here, it says, and will cleave unto his wife. That's the law of pursuit. You energetically pursue your spouse. That's what cleaving means. And they two shall become one. Not 1.3 or 1.8, but one. And the only way that two things can become one is if you both surrender everything to the relationship. In Luke 14, Jesus said, you can't be my disciple unless you give up everything you have. Because anything we won't give up is an idol, and it threatens the relationship. Okay, it's telling Jesus, this is more important to you. So when you come into marriage with children from a previous marriage, the non-biological parent has to share ownership in that child. They can't be on the outside. And I understand they're not the biological parent, and they shouldn't try to replace the biological parent. But they have to be an equal. But there's just this natural thing that says, this is another thing here. It's not trusting each other with decisions related to children or stepchildren because of favoritism, or you don't love them because you don't love them like I love them. Okay, well, let's talk about that for just a minute. Again, marriage is trust. And if you don't trust a person with your children, never marry them. You're making a huge mistake. But when you marry somebody, they become co-owners of those children. They have to have ownership of those children. And you say, but you become protective. And you say, well, you don't love them as much as I love them. Well, let me talk about this for just a minute. Okay, first of all, a lot of people are very emotionally damaged, you know, when they've had a previous marriage or previous relationship. Okay, you say, you don't love them as much as I love them. You know, the greatest love on earth is a decision, not an emotion. Jesus said, love your neighbor as you love yourself. That word is the word agape, and that means a love by choice. I can choose to love your children just as much as you do. And God's love is doing what Jesus would do regardless of emotion or circumstances. Let me say another thing. You know something? Your emotions actually may be working against you because of what you've been through. And the objectivity of the non-biological parent may be the best gift that God's ever given you. And when you take your children away from your spouse, when they should have ownership, and what that means is you're making every decision together. And even though they're a non-biological parent, and they may not have the natural love that you have, I agree with that, they can love your children by choice. That's the greatest level of love. And they can speak objectivity into your life. Now, I've seen a lot of divorces and blended families over this issue right here, where one spouse says something like this, well, you may not be my spouse the rest of my life, but my children are going to be my children the rest of my life. And if it comes down to a choice, I choose my children. Okay. Well, I'll talk about that more in just a minute. It's a mistake. You have to share ownership of the children. Now, it may be wisdom for the biological parent to enforce discipline. That might be wisdom, especially in the beginning of the relationship while the non-biological parent is gaining authority. Well, that might be what, but the non-biological parent has to have full rights to that child. See, in one situation that there was a divorce, the children didn't want the new husband. They were loyal to their biological dad, and they didn't want the mother to get married again. And they tormented this guy, and he was powerless because the wife wouldn't let him have any authority over the children. And he was a good man. He wouldn't have abused those children. But he was just saying, I can't correct them. I can't defend myself. And she said, you better not. And he said, listen, these kids are disrespecting me, and they're making my life miserable. And she said, if you're asking me to choose between you and my children, I choose my children. And they divorced. He said, I can't live this way. I'm vulnerable. And what I said to her is, one, the law of possession. If you didn't trust him with your children, you shouldn't have married him in the first place. But marriage is trust. So parent those children together, and those children need to see you operating as a team. They need that. Another issue of non-biological parenting is the natural sexual barriers are missing. And that doesn't mean there needs to be an atmosphere of mistrust. You just need to understand, though, there is a natural sexual barrier biologically that when you have a step-parent in the family, there needs to be a higher level of modesty and accountability. It's not an atmosphere of mistrust. It's just wisdom that just says we need to wear robes more often. We need to wear clothing that's a little bit more appropriate and modest than we might. And there just needs to be a higher level of wisdom and accountability because that natural barrier is missing. Child support. Let me talk about the law of possession for just a minute. This is one of my relatives divorced. She married into a blended family situation. And when she married into it, he was paying child support to his children, his ex-wife, the way he should have. He was a good man. This is a really good man. And every time they wrote that check, my cousin got madder every month. She just couldn't handle the fact that this money was going to his ex-wife, and she picked up an offense toward his ex-wife, and it just tormented her until ultimately they divorced. Listen, the law of possession says your debts are my debts. Your assets are my assets, your liabilities are my liabilities. And if you've got children from a previous marriage that need to be supported, I fully own that, and I will fully do that with a good attitude supporting you and your children. But she didn't do that. She would not assume the liability of him making that payment. And what happened was the marriage just tanked. It just went south. And so we have to understand that in marriage, there is this law of possession. There's one other thing I want to talk about related to children is visitation. Children coming and children going. And this is one of the most agonizing issues I've ever helped families with. I'm thinking of one family in particular, and this was an ex-spouse that was spoiling the children and letting them have all kinds of exposure to ungodliness with them and their new spouse. Every time the children went, and they knew it, and they were using the children as weapons against them. And every time the children went to their home, they would feed them full of just all kinds of nonsense and let them do anything they wanted to do, let them watch all kinds of movies. And then they would come back from that environment. And this couple came to me and they said, Jimmy, what do we do? Because legally there wasn't anything they could do. They weren't doing anything illegal. They were just being, they were playing the children off of each other and they were trying to spoil the children so they would be favored. And I said, number one, do not communicate through the children. Don't do that to those kids. You communicate directly with your ex-spouse and their spouse and don't use those children as messengers. Okay, let the adults do the communicating, not the children. Number two, every time those children leave your home, you pray over those kids. And if they'll let you lay hands on them and pray for them, do that. If not, just sneak in their bedroom at night and do it. And you pray protection over their mind, their heart, their memory, their sexuality, their attitudes. You pray that God will go with them wherever they go and supernaturally protect them. Number three, do not take for granted every day you have with that child, and don't you play that game. You be righteous. You have standards. You love those children. You take those children to church. Regardless of what they say, don't be legalistic. Be fun and be fair, but you expose those children and do not underestimate the power of God to impact those children's hearts, because righteousness is more powerful than sin. And they may be going into a home of your ex-spouse or someone and they're being exposed to all kinds of stuff. Let me tell you something, the Spirit of God is more powerful than the spirit of the devil. And don't let fear and discouragement get over you. You communicate to the adults, you pray over your children coming and going, and you don't lower your standards because somebody else has. They'll lose that fight. They'll lose that fight, I promise you. And when those children get old, the Bible says when you train up a child in the way that they should go, when they get old, they won't depart from it. When those children mature, they'll bless you for your righteousness, and they'll look at this other person who is doing that, and they'll say, grow up. I love you, Mom. I love you, Dad. But why did you do that when I was growing up? Why did you say those bad things about Mom and Dad? Why did you do those things? Why did you let me get involved in those things? You were supposed to be the adult. And they'll turn back to you, and I promise they'll thank you for what you did. You need to be fair. Don't be legalistic. But you just have faith in the power of God. Those are the things that torment people a lot of times. Those are the day one issues. But let me talk for just a minute about the mother of all blended family issues. This is the big one, and it's the issue of priority. In first marriages, or you know, first relationships, there's marriage and there's children. But in a blended family, there's children and there's marriage. Okay, and the priority of the relationship can get off to a bad start from day one. The children become first. Let me talk to you about this. Marriage is the nucleus of a family, not children. And children are a temporary assignment. They won't be there for a long time. They really won't. And I remember when they put our daughter into my arms, my son into my arms when they were born, and I remember when I put their arm in somebody else's because I did their ceremonies when I married them all. They're gonna grow up. Children are a temporary assignment. And how are they gonna succeed in marriage unless they see you succeeding in marriage? And the law of marriage, the first law of marriage is, for this cause a man will leave his father and mother. That means marriage has to be first. It doesn't work in any other place. It won't work a second. It can't be behind your children. Your children are not as important as your marriage. They're not. Because your children are going to go someday when they're, you know, 18, 19, 38. They're going to leave someday. Thank God. And when they leave, they don't want you following them around. I'm just telling you, I have kids. They're grown. My kids are in their 30s. They have kids. I have grandkids. And I'm just telling you, we are very close. They don't want you in their business. They don't want... And what's going to happen to your life when they leave? Will you have given up your marriage for your children and have nothing left? You put your marriage first. You're not doing anything bad for your children. You're doing everything good for your children. Your children feel more secure when you're happy. And they see you happy marriage. Number two, when they see you happily married, you're giving them a vision for their future. Even if there's been problems in the past, they can see a vision of hope for their future. Number three, when they leave, you have a stable life and you won't follow them around because you're emotionally needy. Marriage has to be first. And what that means is, like us, Karen and I was an example, when our kids were growing up, I mean, we were busy. But what we did is when I got home, we would take a couple of two or three hours and it was all about our kids. And we had dinner with the kids. We spent time with the kids. I would take the kids in their bedroom. I'd put them to bed. I had a guitar. I would sing some worship songs with them. We would talk. We would pray. And they always wanted to talk and pray some more. So we'd sit in there talk and pray. And as soon as I finished, I said, "Now, kids, this is Mom and I's time now." And it would be, you know, 9 at night or something like that. We didn't make our kids go to bed, but we'd let them read. They couldn't watch TV or anything, but we let them read as long as they wanted to. We didn't care. And we made them read, but we just said, "Don't walk out the door unless there's some horrible emergency. Don't walk out the door." And they would, and they come pick the lock on our door. You know, we had to hire guards and stuff, but it was ugly. And we taught them to respect our time. And on a regular basis, we had a date night. And on a regular basis, once every 6 or 7 weeks, we'd go somewhere for the night and let our parents take care of them. And we didn't have a lot of money, so we'd just go to a cheap motel 30 miles away, and we'd spend a wonderful weekend together. And we prioritized our marriage. And when our children left, we thanked God that we prioritized our marriage. Because we had a strong marriage, and we showed them a strong marriage in the meantime. And again, you may have made mistakes. You may have been through a divorce or two. But I'm saying, that's okay. Let this be the last. Let this be the relationship that you focus on. And maybe if you've made mistakes before, don't keep making those mistakes. And I want to go back and say, listen, there are some awesome blended families. Blended families can thrive. Just like an intact nuclear family, a blended family can thrive. You just need to understand the day one dynamics and understand the laws of marriage don't change. The law of priority says marriage has to be first. A family doesn't build around children. A family builds around marriage. It becomes the nucleus that everything revolves around. Work on your marriage. You're doing your children a favor when you do that. And obviously love your children. Obviously give your children quality time and just lavish them. But I'm saying, but your marriage comes first. Number two, the law of possession. When you get married, you have to share everything. The non-biological parent has got to be an equal in the relationship, and you parent those children together. Let me say one other thing about equality. In any family, equality is a big deal. Children are just hypersensitive of, "Billy got a bigger piece of pie. Billy gets a bigger piece of pie every night." No, he doesn't. No, it's the same size. No, he gets a, "You love him more than you love me." I know you love him more than you love me. I mean, that's just typical in children. Then you get into a blended family and it just kind of goes crazy. Here's the point. Our children are absolutely treated the same and we make all decisions together. And I will not favor my children over your children because these are all God's children and we take responsibility for all of them. The worst thing that can happen is if there's a feeling of unfairness, that you do for your kids what you will not do for mine. You're more fair with yours than you are with mine. You're more hard on mine than you are on yours. That just doesn't work. And here's the issue. When you divide, you become unfair, and you also become not thinking properly, imbalanced in your thinking. When you come together and make all decisions together, there will always be fairness because both sides are represented. I'm not going to bully you. I'm not going to demean you. I'm not going to push you. I am going to represent the way that I feel, but I will not act without you. And we will be a united front every single time we make a decision related to our children, because these are not your children and my children. These are our children. They're ours. We are one, and our family is one, and these are our children. And I'm not trying to take the place of their biological parent. I'm trying to be a responsible parent in this home and to take my responsibility seriously. Priority, pursuit. I'm going to pursue you and work hard at this relationship and not spend all my energy somewhere else. Possession, we are one. And purity says the man and his wife were both naked and unashamed. And that means I'm going to be careful about what I do. And when I do something wrong, I'm going to take responsibility. Adam and Eve were able to be intimate in the Garden of Eden until sin came. And when sin came, they hid themselves with fig leaves and they couldn't be intimate any longer because of sin. And because when God came to Adam and said, "What is this that you've done?" He said, "It's my wife's fault." Eve, what's this that you've done? It's the devil's fault. If we're going to have an intimate relationship, I've got to take responsibility for my behavior, and I've got to say I'm wrong and not blame you. Those are the four laws of marriage, and they're true for every marriage, but in a step family or a blended family, we have to be particularly focused on keeping those laws. And if you do, your marriage will flourish, your family will flourish. And if you don't, you know, you're just going to have additional problems. But let me say this about as I close. Every family has challenges, and every marriage has challenges. And I want to go back to one of the first statements that I made. A lot of people in blended families, they somehow feel guilty or that they're second-class citizens or somehow God, they're not as special or something like that. That is baloney. All of us, Karen and I, we almost divorced. I mean, God, I think really only reason God uses us is because if he can do it with us, he can do it with anybody. I mean, I know that I would have been divorced many times if it wouldn't have been for the grace of God. God can't love you anymore. I mean, he loves you as much as he loves anybody else. Your family is as special as any other family. And if you don't believe that, you're wrong. Your family is special. And God can do wonderful, miraculous things through your family. And there's not one other family more special than your family. You just have to believe that. God's on your side. He's with you. And whatever problems that you're having, everybody's having struggles. Everybody's having struggles. But we can make it if God is our partner and we're teachable and we do the right thing.
Thank you for listening. This is the conclusion of the series Marriage on the Rock by Jimmy Evans. For more information or additional resources by Jimmy Evans, visit the Marriage Today website at marriagetoday.com.